Welcome to this webinar on Visual Studio Code for Angular developers. So what are we going to look at today? So first I'm going to introduce you to Visual Studio Code. So what's Visual Studio Code? Why did we kind of deliver it to you? And then basically most of this this webinar, I think about 50 minutes of it, will be entirely focused on demos. I guess you'll learn most of the tool by just experiencing it, playing with it, and seeing how things are done. So this is a bit of the outline of this webinar. Now, if you have any questions that should pop up during this webinar, feel free to tweet to us using this hashtag, AskMSDev, and I'll try to get your questions answered as quick as possible. Now, so quick introduction to Visual Studio Code. So what is Visual Studio Code and why is it there? If we look at the typically the web developer space, typically developers are in between kind of those that are using an editor such as Sublime or Vim or Emacs, so very lightweight experience. Or on, you have the other end of the spectrum, which is those that are using the integrated development environment, such as a full Visual Studio, or Eclipse, or the tooling from JetBrains. So there's kind of these two extremes, going from a simple experience all the way to a more complex and integrated development experience. Now, looking at this editor, so why are people using an editor, and some are even using Notepad for doing web development? Well, it's because it's really lightweight, it's really fast in getting your code. You're really focusing really on writing code rather than having to go through a lot of hoops for doing your stuff. And typically they're focused on individual files, so you want to do a quick edit into a file or a set of files in a given folder. Well, you're just using your editor, browse through your files and do your modifications. And they typically support a lot of languages, whether it's built into the editor itself or it's through extensions. They're basically allowing you to do all kinds of developer workflows, and they're very often geared towards web development or cloud-based developments. And another attribute of these editors are they're usually very heavy on keyboard. So you're using pretty much keyboard shortcuts for pretty much everything you could do within the in the editor. Now, on the other hand, so why are people using this integrated development experience? Basically, these IDEs, they give you kind of what we call a project system. So you have you're loading a project. In that project, you have all kinds of metadata giving you additional information, experiences for doing your development. So you get a rich environment. You get a lot of context. Very often supported through a lot of wizards. And on top of the pure coding experience, which you have in the editors as well, is that these integrated development environments, they give you a lot of code understanding, code refactoring. You have integrated debugging experiences. You have a bunch of designers for writing your, for example, your HTML. All of those tools are added inside of this integrated development environment. So really handy, especially for people new to a technology. They really hold you by the hand and guide you in doing your development. Now, of course, this comes at a cost. As you may have experienced, those development environments, it's if you have to do a quick edit to a single file before your IDE gets started up, the project is loaded, all of these things take really time. And that can be frustrating. So what we've done now with Visual Studio Code is basically give you somewhere a solution in between the two of them. So as you can see, the arrow is well positioned towards the left of the spectrum. So it's very much a lightweight experience that you're getting based on this files and folder structure. But on top of that, and you can see kind of the mix between the bonus points, or the nice attributes of an editor combined with all of the nice to haves that you have in an IDE. So you're working on individual files or folders, but you still get some project context. This project context will help you basically have a better code understanding. And we'll see that in the demos with the support for languages and keyboard center support. But also, Visual Studio Code will give you integrated debugging experience. You can do task running. So typically, if you have an editor and you want to run your tasks, you typically switch back and forth between your editor and your command prompt very often. And that's something that we want to aid you with, is by giving you an environment, a lightweight experience, but still with the richness of an IDE. So you get all of the good stuff from the editor with some good stuff from an IDE, all in one package. Now, the nice thing is, and this may be somewhat surprising for those that have been involved with Microsoft technology or even not with Microsoft technology, is that Visual Studio Code is really a cross-platform solution. So as opposed to the full Visual Studio, and so the IDE, which runs basically only on Windows, Visual Studio Code is really cross-platform, and we have it available for you on Mac, on Windows, and on Linux. So you can run it cross-platform. So if you're doing development on any of those environments, or even on multiple, you can use the same tooling regardless of your platform. So which is really nice. Now, how do we get this cross-platform support? Basically, Visual Studio Code is built on top of the Electron environment, which was built by GitHub, and which is also being used by Atom. It used to be known as the Atom shell, and so the Atom editor, which you may know as well, is also using the Electron underlying shell, which kind of makes it kind of robust. And the nice thing is, and this kind of announcement we made a few months ago, is that Visual Studio Code is now also open source. So whenever you either want to fiddle with it yourself, you want to look at how was code built, you can go to our GitHub repository and just look at the code. Submit bugs if you want to. If there's anything or you want to have new features, you can submit them here on this GitHub repo. And the team is really responsive in helping you either fixing bugs or getting new features in. So we're on pretty much a monthly cycle when new releases are being pushed out. So that's really agile and really rapid changes that are pulled in there. Yeah. Just an anecdote, I submitted a bug, I think last month, and just 2 days after, the bug was already fixed and scheduled to be in the January release. So the current release contains a bug fix to a bug that I submitted, so which is kind of nice. Now, I think enough for slides, so the rest of this webinar will be focused on demos. So for that, I'll switch to my desktop. Whoops. That's better. There you go. Let me close this one off first. Now, first, where do you get Visual Studio Code? So your go-to address is code.visualstudio.com. What you'll see there when you land here, this is our landing page. You can download it for Windows, and you have this link here available for other platforms. Just click on it, and it will get you to the download links for Linux, Windows, and macOS. Now, the nice thing is, if you have been downloading Visual Studio, the full one, that may take some time. It is quite a massive download. Whereas here for Visual Studio Code, I think the download is currently somewhere at 44 megabytes of download, which is, again, a very small package, and it's also part of this lightweight experience. You don't want to spend like an hour, 2 hours of installation of an IDE. Just want to download the tool and get started immediately. And this is what you get with Visual Studio Code. So just go to code.visualstudio.com, download it. As you do this, we can then switch to a command prompt. So where I'm here, I'm just using a simple command prompt. And I'm in you look here in directory, what you see here is basically a simple Angular AngularJS application. It's pretty much the out of the box, the hello world of Angular JS that I'm using here, just not to focus too much on the complexity of the code. What we're going to do is just to work with Visual Studio Code on our files. What we're going to do is we just do code dot just to open up the current folder, or you can just do code with an individual file name and it will open that and that specific file. So we'll just do code dot to get the current directory and open it up in Visual Studio Code. So as you see, it launches up quite quickly, and let's do a quick tour of the layout of Visual Studio Code. So what is it, where do you find things, which is also kind of nice to know where things are. So what you see here is on the left hand side here, you can actually see our file explorer. So you see which files we're working on. So you can see the actual directory structure, the individual files here on the left hand side that we can work on in our editor window. This is kind of the main section here of Visual Studio Code, is the editor window. Also, what you see here on the complete left hand side is a number of views. So we can switch between what we're currently in is the Explorer view. We can switch to a search experience if you're looking for individual files or we're looking for a specific string that appears in any given file. We can have this search view here. Then the third one, you may recognize the icon, is kind of the Git icon. Allows us to do source control. And then the final view is the one for debugging. So this will help us in having our integrated debugging experience. Now, switching back to our Explorer, one important thing which I mentioned also is that Visual Studio Code is really keyboard centric. So pretty much everything you have inside of the editor, you can do it using keyboard shortcuts. And there's a whole lot of them already defined, but you can actually customize it and use your own keyboard bindings if you want to. So if you're used to VI or Emacs and you want to replicate the same keyboard shortcuts inside of Visual Studio Code, well, you can do so if you want to. If you want to spend kind of the time of remapping the different key bindings and make it really your own experience. Yeah. One important thing here is it's really bare bones. So there's only just editing. You have your file explorer, and looking at the menus, there aren't that many things in here. So where is all the rest of the functionality here? And this is kind of made available to you through what we call the command palette. So if you click on, if you press on F1, or you do Shift Control or Shift Command P for the palette, what you'll see appear here, F1, you see these list of commands appear here, and this is also very helpful if you're looking for something specific. So I was talking about the keyboard bindings. Let's say we're looking for keyboard shortcuts. If you start typing key, it will automatically filter, and I can say for open keyboard shortcuts. If we do so, what we'll see here is our editor, and this is also a nice feature of Visual Studio Code. We can work on multiple files at the same time, and we're actually showing you different windows alongside. You can rearrange them if you want to, let's say. And this is, for example, we can see on the left-hand side the list of default keyboard shortcuts, as you can see here. On the right-hand side, you can basically override keyboard shortcuts for your specific environment. So if you want to change kind of the keyboard shortcut for getting the text focus, well, you can just redefine it here by placing it in this keybindings.json file, and that will immediately override in this editor that specific keyboard shortcut. So this is kind of the way you can fill with this. So we can add and open multiple files. Yeah. We'll see more of these commands through this command palette as we go through the demos. Now, let's focus a bit on the code writing experience. So we're here for AngularJS and writing some code. And basically, what can we do? So AngularJS application, typically you have multiple types of files. And looking at our current directory here, what we have is there's a very basic index.html file, which is basically pretty much nothing more than just have a body. We have a list here with a menu with two views, which we'll be able to click on to switch between one view and another. So here you can see already some pieces of Angular where we have an ng view available for switching our different views and so on. So it's really bare bones, just not to make it too complex. So from the go, you'll see already that we in Visual Studio Code we provide you some coloring. So you can distinguish between tags and attributes, different strings. So there's already some code coloring, and we'll also give you some IntelliSense. So as you type, you can have, let's say, for example, a div, which is, if we do ng, it will already show you, well, this could be an ng value, or we have an ng app, if we have a specific app. We can have named list, and you'll also see that we give you IntelliSense. We also give you some additional information if you're new to, for example, you don't know to HTML and you don't know what UL is. It will actually give you some information for you to know what it is. So it's really helpful in getting you started. So some basic IntelliSense inside of an HTML file. Now, of course, There's more than HTML. Once we have our HTML content, we can also look at the styling. Typically, that's done through either CSS or LESS or SAS files. And again, in here, so here on the right-hand side, you see our code coloring. Makes it really easy to read through your code. But what's really nice is we'll also give you, again, some IntelliSense. So let's say we're looking for the background. You can see backgrounds could be background color, for example. If we use a background color, well, we can give it, let's say our background color should be red. What you'll see immediately is kind of a nice feature. It shows you basically what the color red looks like. For this kind of strings, it's pretty easy. On the other hand, if you're using hex codes, not sure if you guys know how to parse just by looking at one what a given hex code is. It's doing the same thing. So here, yellow. Not sure if you knew that this was yellow. You get an immediate glance at what kind of color is this. So this is really helpful in getting you started. And the same thing goes. So we have our styling. We have our HTML. One thing is really nice is if you're using npm and you have a package.json file. Again, we have some coloring, but what's really nice is, let's say we want in our application, we also need jQuery. So what we can do here, jQuery, it will also give us IntelliSense in different packages that are available. Let's say we need jQuery mobile, and there we go, jQuery mobile, and then also for the package version, it will give us IntelliSense. So it's going to connect to the NPM repository and give us the latest version of jQuery Mobile, which is 1.41, which we could use. So again, helping you along the way, but still very lightweight. If you don't want to use it, you don't have to. You can keep on typing, but still along the way, you get some assistance in getting you started. One thing you see here as well is we have a readme.md file, so a markdown file. So especially if you post it on GitHub, you'll have this readme.md file. Again, we get some coloring, we'll get some IntelliSense, but a really nice feature I like is the one where you can actually preview your markdown. So we can just open the preview button here. And you'll see your markdown is really, it's laying out as it would appear in the final result. So this is kind of nice to have this experience. Okay, so this is all a bit context. Let's look at, of course, some AngularJS code. For that, we're going to the app.js file. In here, what you see is we have a file which our Angular module that we define, our MyApp. We define that we root, we have our views, so the different dependencies for our module are in here, and also we are configuring our routing. So, and we're going to route to our view 1 by default. So you see here we have view 1, where we have a view 1 JS, we have some HTML part in there. View 2, again, is really some partial views. Now, how does Visual Studio Code help us with writing JavaScript and AngularJS code? Now, let's look at first, let's add some JavaScript here. Let's start with just pure JavaScript, not necessarily linked to AngularJS yet. So let's define just a variable, so my var, and let's give it a value of 1, 2, 3, for example. So it's a numeric value. In here, in pure JavaScript, well, this my var, it's basically of type any. It could be anything. But you'll notice, if you hover on top of this code, will give you some indication about the actual type that is currently inside of this variable. So right now it's a number, as you can see, while I hover over this variable. At the same time, it will give us IntelliSense. So if I do my var and then do dot, it will give us kind of the methods that are available, so the functions that are available for a numeric value, so for a numeric variable. So it's going to limit those and not give you the full list of potential functions that exist inside of JavaScript. It's going to limit to those that apply to a numeric value. This is still nice. If you don't want those, you can still write your JavaScript and still do a, let's say, for example, do a contain. If it were a text value, you could still do so. So code is not blocking you from it. It's just giving you some assistance in probably providing you the ones that would apply best to what you need. What you'll see also, let's take the, for example, the two exponential one. It's giving you information about the specific method. So it's giving you again some help information. What does this method do? So it returns a string containing a number. It gives you information about the parameters. So we get an optional parameter of type number, which is fraction digits. And the actual result return type of the function is a string. So you get additional information. So we can do so. And again, we get the IntelliSense. Really a nice experience. Now let's say we don't want a numeric value. We want to put a string in here. So what we can do here, and I've created a code snippet. Let's make this a string. And let's define a new variable. So example has dog, and we'll make this my var. If you type now, you'll see that although we have the same variable name, because the value has changed from a numeric value into a string, and you'll see this if you hover on top of it, it says now my var is a string. You get only the functions and methods that apply to a string value. So now we can use the contains method. And basically it's going to give you information. So we're looking for the search string, and let's say we're looking for a dog because it has dog. And now as a result of this, calling this method, you'll see that hasDog has now turned into a Boolean because that is the resulting type of the contains function. So you get all of this assistance as you go. This is all kind of nice and handy in writing just your JavaScript code. One thing else that's helping you in writing JavaScript code is, let's say we define a global variable. So we need, for example, global var equals, for example, version, something like this. So what you'll see is we get this green squiggly lines. So let me zoom in a bit. So you get this squiggly line here underneath global var, saying also a tip that it can't find this specific variable because it hasn't been defined yet, and it can't find it in the entire project here, in the entire directory. Now, what we can do is if we put the cursor on top of it, we get this little light bulb, which is kind of a quick action, and we can click on this. And so it gives us tips on how to resolve kind of this issue. either we can rename it to something that that already exists and that looks fairly similar to our variable, or, and this is the bottom one, we can mark this variable as a global variable. So we have global variables if we want to. If we click on this one, what you'll notice is we get this definition of a global variable on top of our JavaScript file, and our green squiggly line has been resolved, and we get a global variable. So again, very nice to have. You get some indications of things that might be wrong. let's take it one step further now, let me show you some of the what we call code understanding inside of Visual Studio Code. So let's say we write a small function. The add function takes two parameters, a and b, and it's going to return a plus b, as you could have expected from the add function. So I have a function. Everything is of type any. There's no indication whether it's numeric or if it's a string function. And let's just add a new file here. So we have in our app directory, we can add a new file. Let's call it app2.js. This could be a new file. In this file, what we're going to do, we're going to call into the add function. So we want to use this add function. So as we type, again, you'll see we have defined a function with two parameters, a and b, of type any, and let's give them value 1 and 2. We would expect the result to be 3, of course. But as we do so, this is kind of nice. But let's say we kind of, for an add function, it's quite simple, but let's say this was a complex function. We want to look at what does this function look like, or where is it sitting. We can just right-click on add, or just use the keyboard shortcut, and you'll see that we have these top three functions here. It says go to definition, so we can actually navigate to the actual definition of this function, or we have a peak definition. So if we don't want to switch context, we can actually look at the contents of this function inside of our current editing window. So let's do that. So let's do peak definition. So what you see here, we're on top of our add function. We can see in line here the definition of our add function. And we see actually that it's returning a plus b. This is all nice. What is even nicer is this is an editable window. So we can, for example, say this should not be return a plus b, but it should be a minus b. As a result, this will apply immediately, will be changed in the other file, in the app.js file. And what's more is we can actually, just on top of this one, if we do F2 or we do right-click rename symbol, we can make this, for example, subtract. As we enter, you'll see that it's changing here in our definition, but also the function invocation has changed its name. So we get really code understanding, knowing that if there is one or multiple invocations of a function, we rename that function, it's going to change wherever we have method invocation. So you don't have any kind of where you need to do a find of a given string, do a replace, and then all of a sudden your code doesn't compile because you don't find replace didn't work as you expected. So really can have intelligent kind of renaming and finding definitions really helps you quickly browsing your code, understanding how things work. So especially I kind of like the keyboard shortcuts F12, Alt F12 to do peak definition, to do go to definition. So if we do F12, we're just going to navigate immediately to that specific function. So this is all pure JavaScript, IntelliSense, all very nice. But what you see still here is we see in our Angular, because we're writing Angular code here, how do we get IntelliSense for Angular? Because it can't find the specific definition for Angular here. It's kind of an unknown variable. So how do we add IntelliSense to Angular inside of Visual Studio Code? For that, what I need to show you is there's a project which is called Definitely Typed. What is this? It's basically a community effort where people have defined basically the interfaces of all kinds of web application frameworks, whether it's Angular, whether it's jQuery, anything basically of JavaScript frameworks. And let me show you here. If we go to definitelytyped.org, what you see here is we can go to the repository, and it will actually give us what we call type definition files. This is kind of using a bit of borrowing a bit of TypeScript, where we add metadata for different types of JavaScript frameworks through what we call DTS files or TypeScript definition files. Yeah. So all of this has been built by the community. So you can see here a full list of definitions. So for Angular, we have Angular Agility, we have NuGetText, HTTP, and so on. The full stack of JavaScript libraries are available to you. Now, how can we use this? It's good that they're sitting there on GitHub. You can download basically the definition file manually, or we can go to our command window and download basically the type definition by using what we call the typings command. How do you get typings? So typings here, if you do like this, it's allowing you to get type definitions on your local machine in your local project. How do you get this? You can just do an npm install globally of typings, and then you'll get this command line tool. So let's do typings, and let's say we want to install Angular. And I have to give it the ambient kind of parameter option, because typings goes first to an overcompassing repository. Using the ambient, I can make it look in all of the repositories that are available, not just the typings repository, but also could be npm, could be the definitely typed repository. So it's going everywhere. Yeah. So we just do typings install Angular -ambient, and let's see what this gets. I found one. Do you want to continue? Yes. So now it has added the specific type definition file. Let's say we want to do the same thing for jQuery. Yes, we want to get this one. There we go. Now we have downloaded basically two type definition files. If we switch back to Visual Studio Code, what you'll notice is, I'm just going to minimize this a bit, is that we get a folder which is called typings. In here you can see DTS files. So we have in main, we have an Angular one, and we have a jQuery DTS file, type definition file. And also, as a result of this, immediately what you see here, Angular no longer has the squiggly line. And if we hover over it, we get some type information here already. So Angular is a variable, it's of type iAngularStatic. So we get again this IntelliSense for Angular. IntelliSense. So if we start typing Angular, we get the information, and we can do dot, and we'll get basically all of the things that apply to Angular. So we get the different interfaces. We could say module. It's going to give us information about the parameters. So let's say my app. Go further. We have config. What is config? Again, we get information. So we can use this method to register work which needs to be performed on module loading. So it's a configuration file. So with this, using these type definition files, you get IntelliSense for here for Angular, but just the same. If you want, we have the jQuery type definition file. We could do the dollar, which is kind of the shortcut for jQuery. We can do AJAX. So it's AJAX. What you'll see also there is there's multiple overloads for this specific method. We get function. So we get again IntelliSense, but then for web frameworks. So you could add pretty much for every single framework that exists, there's already a type definition file available to you. Yeah. So all really nice, nice to haves here inside of Visual Studio Code. Okay. So this is kind of the core editing experience. So writing code, where you have IntelliSense, some code understanding, some with the, especially with the renamings, which is really nice. One of the things I didn't show you, or which you saw, is kind of code snippets. So we can have code snippets. So let's say you want to type a try catch loop. So you can say try catch tab, and you'll get the outline of a try catch loop, try catch block. Same thing goes for if you have a for each, you can have an array for each, and you can. So there's a whole lot of snippets. If you go to the command palette and do here snippets, let's say we want to look at snippets for JavaScript, you can even create your own code snippets. So I just created one for the quick text that you saw there, the quick brown fox. I just created a snippet here for me. If I type fox and then tab, it will automatically inject this specific code segment. So you have already a whole bunch of snippets that are available to you for the standard constructs. You can create your own. And one thing that is also nice is Visual Studio Code has a whole marketplace of extensions. One of the extensions that exists is the Angular 1 code snippets. So if you do ng1, you'll see that if we want to add an Angular 1 controller, just do Angular 1 controller, and we get kind of the outline here injected for basically a controller written in Angular 1. Yep. Now, I talk about extensions. Where do you get these extensions? So landing page here, where do you find these extensions? If we go to marketplace.visualstudio.com and just give it the Visual Studio Code bookmark, what you'll see is the whole list of extensions that exist inside of Visual Studio and Visual Studio Code. So we have extensions for also for team services, for the full Visual Studio. But here we see kind of the gallery of Visual Studio Code extensions. There's a number of featured ones. So you have extensions for debuggers, which one we'll be using is the debugger for Chrome, because we want to do client-side JavaScript debugging using Chrome and the Chrome browser. If you're doing Python or PHP, again, there's debuggers available to you. Yeah. Language support, linters, we have code snippets. So here you can find the Angular 1 code snippets. We can change the theme of Visual Studio Code. So if you want to change the color theme, either create one yourself or you can get an extension. There's a whole lot of things you could do. So as I said, we want to have this debugger for Chrome extension because we want to do debugging of our client-side code. How do you get it? So here you can see some information. How do you get started with an extension? Just go to Visual Studio Code again. We're going to open our command palette, so F1 or Shift Control P for palette. And then we're going to type ext for extension. And immediately you see here install extension. As we type this, it's going to connect to the marketplace and give you kind of the list of extensions that exist. So we wanted the one for Chrome, and we need the debugger for Chrome. We click this one. Or we can just navigate to it with the arrow keys and just enter. You see that the extension was installed. You just have to restart Visual Studio Code to enable it. So just click the Restart Now button. So the nice thing is, if you're restarting Visual Studio Code, if it's restarting or you're just opening up in the same folder or directory, it's going to open up the windows as they were. So we had app.js open. It's going to keep those files open for you as well. So this is also really, really handy. It keeps your context for you. So this is kind of how you add extensions. You can see if we go back to the command palette here, if you go extensions, what are my installed extensions? I can see kind of the list of extensions that I have currently active. So one of there is debugger for Chrome, the Angular one, and TypeScript snippets are available for me. Okay, so we'll go into the debugging part in just a minute, but let's just focus on the next thing. So we've written some code, we got some IntelliSense, this is all nice. What you typically do when you have written your code, you want to keep it somewhere safe. Yeah, you want to put it in source control. typically what you use, or very often people use, a Git repo for source control system, which you can do here. And we have provided, and you can see this here on the left hand side, if you go to the Git kind of view, we can give our source control view and functionality inside of Visual Studio Code. You don't have to switch to the command prompt for initializing your Git repo, for doing adding files, and for committing your files to your repo. So if you click the initialize Git repo, what's going to happen is it's going to fire off a Git init command inside of our folder. So as it's going here, so first thing you'll see here is that all of these files are basically added, and we have kind of how many changes do we have? We have like 14,704 files inside of our commits. If we would commit now, we'd have 14,000 files, which is not really what we want, right? Because what you see here, we have our Bower components. We have, if you look in our Explorer, it's taking by default every single file that's sitting there. So that's Bower components, but you also have all of the node modules. That's again 10,000 plus files that are sitting underneath node modules, because we have a whole bunch of modules there. How do you get rid of them? Well, we're just going to create a git ignore file. Let's do git ignore. One thing you see, it's being added here in our app folder. We want it at the root folder, so we can just drag it here, put it at the main level, the root level of our application here. So our git ignore. One thing you'll see here is you get an indication of how many files are currently considered under inside a given change. So we still have 99 plus. What we want to ignore is our Bower components and our node modules. I think it's Bower dash. That should be it. And our node modules. You'll see that the number of files is being recalculated. We see here 38. One thing I didn't mention, files are being by default automatically saved by Visual Studio Code. So if there's some period of inactivity, it's going to save behind the scenes your file. So here we can see now that we have only 38 files still inside of our change set, basically for Git. Now, either we can just give it here a commit message, let's say initial version, and then immediately commit the change. Or if you want to kind of not immediately commit all of our changes, but just stage a few of them. So we have also staging. So we can say here stage all, or we can stage an individual file that is part of a given specific change set that you want to create. We can say stage all. It's going to take all 38 changes. And let's say now, just for the sake of a demo, let's say that our, do you have any readme file here? Let's say the readme file, we want to exclude this one from our change. So we have currently 38 stage changes, and if we now commit, what you'll see is we have our readme file, which we are still changing. It was not part of our our change set, so it's not committed yet. Okay. And you see that we have a single file currently being edited. Now, what is really nice is we have our app.js and a link to source control and changes is very often we want to look at what did I change in a given file. Maybe did I remove some lines? What is kind of the delta? You want to do a diff between the current version and whatever was committed into your repo. So let's say in our app.js we want to re-add here our function add. Let's take a b and so we return a plus b, something like this. Immediately what you see is we get an indication here, this green bar next to function, which indicates that we have added a new line, and this should be an a probably. If we remove a line, let's say we want to remove these blank lines, you get this small arrow indicating that this was a that there was a line which was removed. So you get indication about added lines, removed lines, straight inside of your editing window. If we were to add some comments and so much more, you get a blue bar here indicating that we have changed lines as well. So already inside of your editor window, you get an indication what has changed, what was added, what was changed in terms of lines. Did we remove any lines? But better would be if we could kind of look at what has changed individually. If we have a side by side kind of diff. Again, this is available to you. Here on the top right hand side, what you can do is you can switch the changes view. So if you have files under source control, if you click on this one, you'll have here, you can look at the different files that were changed. And you could see here we have some changes in lines. We have a new line here on the right hand side. This one was modified. We have a line that disappeared. So we really have a side by side diff view. You can also have them inline if you prefer the inline view. You can see them in here. You can see before and after as you look to your file. So we have diffing available to you. We have that on top of kind of the indications that you already have inside of your file. Okay, let's go to the editor view. There you go. So we still have those bars in here. So this is kind of how you work with Git. Again, you see here that we now have two changes. We can commit them. Some updates. Just you have multi-line editor commit messages. So now we can see we don't have any changes anymore. Yeah. In this case here, I'm just working with a local repo. You could also have, if you have a remote repo defined, you will be able to kind of pull and push your changes. Publish is basically a combination of pulling and pushing, syncing your files with your remote repository. Also nice here in the status bar, you also get information about the current branch that you're using. If there's any changes that are local or that you don't have remotely, it will give you that indication as well in the status bar. Okay, so this is how we deal with source control and code editing. So we've seen kind of a number of changes, a number of functionalities. Yeah. Okay, this is all good. Let's start some debugging now. We have written some code. It's in source control. We want to do debugging of our application now. We can just start it. Let me just quickly show you what the application looks like. I'm just going to do an npm start, which is just going to start up a light server with browser sync enabled. It's going to launch the app, so you can see kind of this amazing AngularJS application. As you see, it's going to open it up, localhost at port 3000. As it starts up, so here, this is what we changed there. We changed the background in our CSS file to yellow. We have our view 1, which is this one here. We have our view 2, which is going to show us some additional information. That's basically it. So it's really quite an impressive AngularJS sample app. Now, while this one is running, so what you saw is I installed the Chrome Debugger extension. This is the one that you will be needing if you want to do client-side debugging. Let me just quickly close this off to have some more screen state. Debugging in Visual Studio Code. We just go to the debug view here. The first thing that you need to do is you need to configure how does debugging work for this kind of application. Is it a Node application? Is it here client-side debugging? Is it a PHP application that you want to debug and that you want to integrate with Xdebug? Is it PowerShell? Whatever type of application. So you need to give some indication, some clues to Visual Studio Code on how to do debugging, how it works. Yeah. For that, you can look here at this cog icon. The top left hand side. So this specific one. Yep. If you click on this one, it's going to generate what is called a launch.js file. It's kind of a launch configuration. And in here you can select your debugging environment. And this will change, and this depends on what extensions you have installed. So I have PowerShell, I have Chrome, I also have PHP debugging installed here. So this may be, you may not have all of these if you don't have those respective extensions installed on your machine. So let's switch to Chrome here. It's going to give you a default launch JSON file. Let me just, for the sake of this demo, grab one that I've already prepared, which kind of maps to our application. There we go. And let's go through it. So this should probably, if I need to check, what is our URL? So what we're doing here is we're specifying kind of debug configurations. So you see here debug configurations. I have one. You can give it a logical name. So we're going to launch on the local host machine. So we have our website running using the Lite server. It's of type Chrome debugging. It's a launch request. And this is kind of the URL that we need to navigate to. This is kind of the homepage of our website that needs to be debugged. We have source mapping available so that we can set breakpoints. We specify the web root of our application, which is our app folder. And then in here, this is something that is very specific, particular for this Chrome debugger extension. You need to give it the path to where your Chrome actually is sitting on your machine. So this one points to where Chrome is sitting on my machine here. And then also we need to specify, give it a runtime argument. If we launch Chrome for debugging, well, we need to give it kind of the remote debugging port. And this is something that's specific for Chrome and the Chrome debugger. It needs to know what port to connect to inside of the browser to be able to transmit kind of debug statements back and forth between Visual Studio Code and Chrome. Okay, so basically this is what we need to do. So how do we start up our application? As you define here our configuration, you'll see here in this drop down, you can see you'll have one or more of these configuration appear here. Yeah, and then we can start it. Either we click this green little button or we do F5. One thing we need to do, of course, if we run it like now, we'll just have console messages being outputted here into Visual Studio Code. But of course, we want to kind of step through our code. We set some breakpoints inside of our code as we go to see what happens. How do we set breakpoints? So let's look at some of our code. And let's, for example, set a breakpoint here in our view 1.js. Let's just add here a console. Log here inside view one, something like this, so we have an indication. How do you set a breakpoint? Either you click here on the left of the line number, or you can use F9, which is kind of the most typical keyboard shortcut for setting breakpoints. Just toggle a breakpoint by using the F9 key. And one other breakpoint we're going to set is we have here a filter that we define, which is being used in our view 2. It's going to return just a version number. And let's set here a breakpoint. Okay, that's basically it. So we have two breakpoints. And you could see here in the debug view, in your breakpoints, you can have here, you can see the list of breakpoints that have been defined. So here we have two. We can enable or disable them. So if we now do F5 to launch Chrome for our application, you can see it's launching. Let me just quickly show you here. It's going to localhost 3000, the index page. And you can see here Chrome is now being paused. And it's because we're having a debug session in Visual Studio Code. Yeah. So by default, we're navigating to view 1. And so as a result, as we launch our view 1, we hit our breakpoint here. You can see it. We hit our breakpoint. We can have some information about local variables. There aren't that many variables right now. We just have the this object, the this. kind of object that exists, but that's pretty much it. There aren't that many. There's some global variables that exist, but there are nothing more. So we can step through our code, either using this, or we could use the keyboard shortcuts again, so which are F11, F10 to step over to F10, and just continue using F5. You see that we also have the debug console appear here while we're debugging. Yeah, we don't have a fav icon set for our application. So now we're in view 1. What would be expected is if we navigate to view 2, we should hit our other breakpoint. So if we click on view 2, you'll see again we're breaking here and we are hitting our breakpoint. And again in here we have again our local variables, which is the version. We can also hover on top of them. So you can see version is this, text is this specific value. But also what we can do, we can just add watch variables, so we don't have to hover over them. So let's say I want to know what version is. So here I have these watch variables available to me. Okay. So this is how kind of you can debug, step through your code, watch what is happening. You also get information about the current call stack. So where exactly, how did we get here? So you can navigate through the entire specific stack of code on in how we ended up in our specific function. And this is all very handy if things go wrong and you want to see what is kind of the call stack. That information is available to you, linked to your code that you've written here, using thanks to the source mapping. Yeah, so just F5, and we'll see here the current version is 0.1, which is the information that we got also in our debug view. Okay. So that's kind of debugging. So what did we cover so far? So code editing and IntelliSense. We got source control integration using Git. Now we saw debugging, specifically then for AngularJS or JavaScript, client-side JavaScript, using the Chrome debugger extension. How do you get these extensions? Now, what I want to end up with is very often in web development, you're working with tasks, and then specifically the typical example, if you're using styling, very often people and style sheets, very often people are using either SAS or less, or if you're using TypeScript for doing your Angular, which you can, and we have a webinar coming up on Angular and TypeScript. Well, you want to basically have some transpiling, whether it's from this less file into a CSS file or whether it's from TypeScript into JavaScript. You need to do some pre-processing before you actually launch your application. Yeah. How this is typically done is, well, either you go through your command line, but also often people are using gulp or grunt, these task runners. So for this I've defined a gulpfile.js. And what is this one doing? It's basically taking all less files and executing basically the gulp less command on them. Yeah, here you can see we're executing less on every less file which is sitting in our app folder. Yeah, and it's going to output it also in the app folder. Now, how does this work? Typically, you would either run it through the command line. But we have inside of Visual Studio Code, what we do is we have also task running functionality. Yeah. And by default, what we do is we parse your folder here, looking for grunt files or gulp files, or even jake files if you're doing Java. And again, going to our command palette, we could say task and say I want to run a task. As a result of doing that, it's going to parse and look for a gulp file, which we have, or a grunt file. And it sees, you know, hey, you have two tasks that have been defined. You can see here our less task and our default one, which is basically watching for file changes. Let's say we want to run the less task. It's going to give you the output. And if less works well, you see here the output result. We have styles.css being generated based on our less file. So we can see it side by side. If I just control click, it's going to open it side by side. We can see the end result of our styles.css. Yeah. So you get immediately, you can run it here and say run run task. You'll get the list of tasks, and this is all nice and handy. Yeah. So we have the support for Grunt, Jake, and Gulp all built in here. So we identify the different tasks. If basically you're saying, well, this is not something I really want to do, you can use basically the built-in task functionality as well, which is sitting in Visual Studio Code. So we have a task runner also as part of Visual Studio Code. How does this work? Again, we go to our task runner and we say task. You could say configure task runner. There we go. What is happening here? Let me close this one off, and also this one, is that it has identified that we have a gulp file, and that if we run our task, it's going to execute the default gulp task in here. Yeah. So this is one option, or we could put in here, for example, we can make this the TypeScript compile command, or you can have an npm if you want to run npm scripts, and so on. So we have either automatic detection of gulp task or grunt tasks, or you could specify your own specific task in here using the Visual Studio Code task runner. What is kind of the advantage of doing this? Well, it's going to tie it to the what we call the build keyboard shortcut. So if you do Shift Control B, it's going to execute the specific build task. Yeah, so we need to specify that in here. We can then specify that we have a build task linked to our Control Shift B command. So with that, I kind of gone over the hour. We kind of covered quite briefly how we get started with Visual Studio Code for kind of client-side web development, AngularJS development. Where do you get more information? We got a couple of links here in our presentation, but definitely I'd recommend going to code.visual2.com in the document section. You'll find specific support for and details about how to deal with JavaScript, HTML, how do I create my own extensions, because this is also possible. So extensions are just JavaScript code. So how do you do all this? Okay. I hope with that we kind of have a full understanding or some understanding of what Visual Studio Code is. We've gone through editing, customizing keyboard shortcuts. You can use different themes, add extensions, do version control, debugging your code using the Chrome debugger extension, and then finally ending up with Grunt, Gulp, task integration inside of your web application. Number of resources, the links, we'll share the PowerPoint slides here. The recording will be also available on Channel 9. So get Visual Studio Code, links to the marketplace, and actually the links to the source code of Visual Studio Code itself. If you want to look at more of these JavaScript webinars, we'll have them on Channel 9 pretty much every week. There is one coming up, apart from some holidays. So there's a whole series about AngularJS, and we also have a number of webinars about Node.js. So thanks a lot for joining us here in this webinar. If you have any questions right now or later on in the upcoming days, feel free to tweet using hashtag AskMSDev, and we'll be happy to answer your questions. And with that, I want to thank you for joining us, and hope to see you, hear you later on in other webinars.